Welcome to the Men on Purpose podcast, featuring dynamic conversations with emerging and established visionary men on purpose. Thanks for joining us today as we celebrate the men on purpose who are committed, creative, courageous change makers all around the world. Now, here's the host of Men on Purpose, Emerald Greenforest.
And welcome to another episode of the Men on Purpose podcast, where we celebrate men on purpose and provide our listeners with wisdom and immediately actionable steps to be more purposeful, powerful, and positive in their impact and leadership. This is your host, Emerald Greenforest, and today we are welcoming a very special guest who knows all about leadership in situations that 99.999% of us would never, ever imagine facing. Dave Sanderson is the president of his firm, Dave Sanderson Enterprises, which is based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. On January 15th, 2009, Dave was the last passenger off the plane that crashed into the Hudson River, best known as the Miracle on the Hudson, and was largely responsible for making sure so many others made it out safely. In addition to speaking and training, Dave conducts workshops, is a much sought-after podcast celebrity, an author with his best-selling book titled Moments Matter, hosts his own radio show on Contact Talk Radio and C-Suite Radio called Moments Matter with Dave Sanderson, and his daily flash briefing on Amazon Alexa titled Dave Sanderson Declassified. He and his wife, Terry, reside in Charlotte, North Carolina. They have four children, Chelsea, Colleen, Courtney, and Chance. And I am so honored and grateful to have you here on the show today, Dave, to speak about leadership and about the chance for you to make moments matter.
Thank you, Emma. I'm really honored to be with you today. Thank you very much for having me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe that men on purpose are courageous. That's one of the C's. I love that all your children have C words, and all of my questions are going to be C words today. So men on purpose, in my mind, are courageous. And you are somebody who's been courageous in an experience that, as I said in the intro, 99.999% of the people on the planet would never even imagine themselves in that circumstance. So I want to talk to you today about your story. I'd like to have you share with us a little bit about, you know, how you found yourself in that position. And more importantly, what you did and what you continue to do to find the courage and gird your heart to face the challenges that life puts in your path.
Well, thank you very much. And candidly, I was not supposed to be on that plane. I was scheduled to be on the 5 o'clock flight that night. But that day I was working in a distribution center in Brooklyn, New York, in my job as a sales manager. And that distribution center opened up about 2 o'clock in the morning. So we wanted to get involved with all the action. So we started our day at about five. So we got done about 10. Now I travel over 100,000 miles a year, what I do in my job. So any chance to get home a little early, I usually try to take advantage of that. So about 10 o'clock that morning, I called our travel agent. I work with her and she put me on US Airways flight 1549. So I believe that I was supposed to be on that plane for a reason. And so there's nothing extraordinary about the day. It was 11 degrees and snowing, but it's New York in the middle of the winter. Nothing big deal about that. And I was one of the first set of passengers to board the plane today because of my status on US Airways. I was a chairman. I was top tier. So I was in seat 15A. That's four rows behind the left wing. And about 60 to 70 seconds after Captain Sullenberger took off, it's when I heard an explosion. And it was a loud explosion. I had never heard anything on a plane like that before. So sort of woke me up because I was actually just reading a magazine. I wasn't paying attention like most people don't pay attention on planes. But then when I looked out the window, I saw fire coming out from the left wing. And I knew something had happened, but you know, I thought plane lost an engine. I flew so often. I know planes have multiple engines. So when he started banking, I thought he was just going back to LaGuardia to get another plane. But fortunately for us, we had a captain who had about 40 years of experience, 20,000 hours of flight time, who kept his head and focused and was able to not only glide us over the George Washington Bridge, and he only cleared the bridge roughly by 300 to 400 feet. See, and the bridge, I found out later, is only 600 feet up. So he was roughly 900 to 1,000 feet at that point in time. So as he crossed over the bridge, I sort of looked out the window, and I saw people's faces looking up at us, and I knew we were pretty close, but then I looked down, and all I could see is the river, and that's the point I thought that, you know, we're probably going to crash and probably wasn't going to come back.
That's a big challenge to face, Dave. And so I'd love to have you talk about, like, what did that feel like in that moment? Like, what were you in that moment, in your own self?
So fortunately for me, I was head of security for a gentleman named Tony Robbins for 10 years. So I traveled with Tony, I learned and absorbed what he taught. And one of the things he teaches, if anybody knows anything about Tony Robbins, is managing your state, right? How to manage your mind to get yourself in the appropriate state. So I was asking myself questions. I was just having internal dialogue because I couldn't jump up and down like he does and get myself going. So that last minute, people ask me that a lot. I said, what was that last minute like? And I'll first give an example. We had a lady from our church that was in the earthquake in Haiti. And she was stuck under the building for about 7 or 8 hours. And when she got home and we were comparing notes, because I've been through a plane crash, she went through an earthquake. We're like, what happened? And we both had a very similar situation. That last moment, you see your life pass before your eyes. It's like your movie of your life is like running and you're seeing things that you hadn't seen with clarity. And all of a sudden you have a clarity of what's happening and clarity of your purpose. And that's sort of what happened to me too, because it was only about 60 seconds after he crossed the bridge before he crashed in the river. And that 60 seconds, I saw so many things with clarity and I came out, with knowing pretty much why I was here. I mean, it was like a very, very weird feeling, but you come back out and all of a sudden you have a second chance to live. But all of a sudden you're in the river and water's coming into the plane quickly. So the water, when we hit, was about ankle to knee deep. And by the time I got standing up, it was about waist deep where I was at. So the plane was sort of angled into the water, if you remember the picture. The back of the plane had a lot more water. The front of the plane had maybe ankle deep. Yeah, my game plan was just get to the aisle, get up and get out. First thought that I had, aisle up out. I said, I had a game plan, aisle up out. But when I got to the aisle, that's when things started to change for me that day, because I heard my mother, and my mother had passed away in 1997. That's something in my head that I remember her saying years ago. I heard it this again. It's like, if you do the right thing, God will take care of you.
Beautiful.
And what I realized after, and my mom had already passed away, I said, my mother never told me what to do. She always made me make a choice, make a decision, which was a great thing for her to do. Because I think one of the challenges we all have right now, and I'm included in this, I'm working on it, is we don't make our kids make decisions. We'll give them the answer and let them go on. And so when they have to face a decision, they don't know how to make a decision. Fortunately for me, I had a mother who made me make decisions. So my decision was to go to the back of the plane because, people were filing out, but you don't know what's going on. So when I got back there, we got everybody going. And so by the time it was my time to get out, I turned to the right. The first flight that I saw was 10F on the right. So I started diving out to go on the wing like everybody else. But when I got there, Emerald, there was no room on the wing or the boat for me. And that's why I was inside the plane for about 7 minutes, waist deep in 36 degree water, hold on to lifeboats so it didn't float out into the river. That's how I became the last passenger off the plane. And I didn't know I was the last passenger until I was on Good Morning America. And there's a picture shown of me, which I have right now. I show people of me hanging out of the plane with water all the way up my back. And that's how I knew I became the last passenger off the plane.
Well, there's pieces of this story that are so potent and they're so reflective of what I believe Men on Purpose are here to do and how they're here to be. One, I'm hearing clarity. Two, I'm hearing courage. Three, I'm hearing choice. These are all things that we talk about on every show almost when we're talking about and defining Men on Purpose. And the more important piece that I'm hearing is that you were called. You were actually called to not only be on that plane, but you were called to have the experience of choosing to support and help others with the clear conversation that came through from your mom that you would be held, that you would be taken care of. And you've had such an extraordinary experience. And I want to talk to you about Moments Matter, because clearly you stood in your greatness in those moments. And so out of that, you actually had an opportunity to choose again and to choose, what am I going to do with this experience? And you made some choices, including creating your radio show and your book and all of those things. So I'd like to hear a little bit about your own process for making those choices and deciding not to be a victim, but to really capitalize on what God gave you as a calling.
I appreciate you actually stating it that way, because I think you're exactly right. It's a calling. here's the backstory. I like to tell people there's an untold story, then there's a backstory to the untold story. So the backstory is when I got home that next day, my company had not called me the night before in the hospital, and worse, they didn't call my wife to check in. So when I got back, I went by the office because I didn't know if anybody knew that I had even been in a plane crash. And I walked in, and my regional manager came up. We were talking. He goes, "You're going to Michigan next week, right?" My kids were looking at me because my wife was very smart. She didn't want me to drive home alone. And Kaylee, I shouldn't have been driving anyway. I shouldn't have been close to a car. And my kids are starting to look at me. And I said, "Yeah, I'll go." And that's the moment, Emerald, I realized that, you know, I love the people I work with, but I was just a number. If I would have died that day on the plane, they would have put somebody else in that seat to go to Michigan next week and gone on with life. And that's when I knew that I had to do something else. But I still got a wife, four kids, college educations, and all this. So fortunately for me, my relationship with Tony was really close, and he was coaching me this whole time. He was telling me sort of what to expect and the media and things were going to happen and watch out for this and heads up for that. But I was still working. And what happened was about a year and a half, maybe 2 years later, I was with him in Chicago and he called me into a suite. He said, "You know, I want to get another security director. It's time for you to fly. It's time for you to do this. You got to burn the boats. You got to go for this." Because one thing about Tony, when I was picking him up at the airport or the helipad, I mean, it would not fail. He would say, "Are you still working for that company?" He'd ask me this, "Are you still working for that company?" And I tell people, you can only make up so many excuses with Tony. He'll cut through the crap pretty quick, right? And so you can't lie to the guy, right? He said, "I'm going to find somebody else. I'm going to put you in a position where you have to do this."
Yeah.
So I did it, but I had to get my wife to buy in. My wife's big turning point was she had to have certainty, right? I had to give her certainty that she was going to have everything she had, including health insurance and all the stuff that you have, right? So once I figured that out, and it was very costly financially, she let me do this. So that's why I did what I did and made the move, but I still had to figure it out. But people say, "Well, how did you grow from this?" And really, you know, what, that's a great question, because that's the reason I did my TED Talk last year up at Queen's University in Canada, is because I find people who have gone through a traumatic life event, most people, you know, 95% of them go through a depressed state or PTSD, as we saw in the movie Sully, where Sullenberger was going through the same thing. But I kept saying to myself, "Well, I didn't." I always say, "Well, what's different with me and with them?" Even everybody on the plane was going through this, right? They're going through therapy and all these, but I didn't. And I started thinking of the strategy, what strategies did I do? And what did I do? And AARP Magazine sort of gave me the platform to talk about it. It was called post-traumatic growth syndrome. How does somebody grow from a traumatic life event? And so I shared the strategies on what I did to grow. And all of a sudden it took off. People just kept asking, because all of a sudden I'm talking to military people and law enforcement and people going through avalanches in Nepal. And I'm like, wow, there's a lot of people in pain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I still talk a lot about what happened that day and gives people get inspiration. But my avenue sort of shifted to showing people how to grow from a traumatic life event instead of going into depression and how to get out of that. And I'm not clinical whatsoever. I mean, it's not the strategy that I use worked. And yeah, one of the things that I've learned all these years, and you probably do the same thing, is success leaves clues, right? Model those who've gotten the outcome and you'll get the outcome. And that's what I'm trying to do, is model for people how to grow from this. And so that's how I started growing from this experience and how I started maneuvering through what I'm doing right now and how I started, you know, my radio show and the daily flash briefing and what I'm doing with the workshops in Atlanta. And it all started from that.
Beautiful. Well, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how you celebrate, because that's another C word that Men on Purpose, I have found, know how to celebrate. And so I want to talk to you then about that as soon as we come back. And thank you to all of our listeners who are downloading, rating, and reviewing. We've already had thousands of downloads from all over the world. And we want to shout out this week to our listeners. I think I'm going to actually shout out to our listeners in New York. I'm sure we have some. It's listed as United States. We've got a lot of listeners in the United States. I'm sure we have some people in New York, because today on our show, we're talking to Dave Sanderson, who's really the person who was the miracle on the Hudson, who allowed himself to become clear and courageous and make the choice to be actually the last passenger on the plane that crashed in the Hudson River. So we'll be right back in just a few moments to talk to Dave about celebrating.
The Men on Purpose podcast is brought to you by the Creative Age Consulting Group. Men, are you ready to take the leap and go deep to discover the most meaningful mark you can make with your life? Is now the time to consciously craft the legacy life you want to lead?
Are you already a legendary leader looking for your big what's next? Creative Age Consulting Group is hired to help men just like you to gain clarity, create consciously, and commit courageously. Please visit timetomakeyourmark.com to apply for an invitation-only consultation. Be sure to apply for a consultation today if you have been inspired to receive support in serving your purpose and making your most meaningful mark. Once again, that's timetomakeyourmark.com or click on the link in the show notes for access to the application.
All right, Dave, well, you have had a life-altering experience. I'm sure you've had more than one life-altering experience, because one of the things that I've noticed about people like yourself who face death, they often face it more than once in a variety of different ways. Yours was pretty dramatic, but I'm guessing that, you know, it was a death for you to leave the business, the company that you were in, and I'm sure that you've faced a lot of other little deaths as well, and you've been able to come out on the other side and really take those death experiences, including the big one, and turn it into something really powerful and a celebration of life. So I'd like to ask you, what is it that you do to celebrate when you set a goal in front of yourself, or when you've come through some kind of deathing and rebirthing experience? How do you celebrate so that you really anchor it in? You know, do you do this with family? Do you have your own little private ritual? What's your celebration of life, Dave?
That's a great question. I think there's a pre-plane crash day when I made goals. Like, if I hit this, the first goal, a big goal I ever had was, if I become the number one sales guy in our office, I'll buy a Cadillac. And I did. And my wife's looking at me, how can you afford a Cadillac? And I couldn't afford a Cadillac, but I made that. But that shifted. I sort of have a different perspective, because now when I achieve anything, whether it's just getting on a radio show or if it's being able to present in front of 1,000 people, what I do is I turn it around. It's all about contribution. I give. So yeah, I do something, whether it's giving money, which I do, or give my time, whether it's that. I give something back to somebody, because I've been given a gift. Mm. And I've been given a lot of gifts. And one of the gifts I have is I have my life. But one of the gifts I've been given is the opportunity to meet so many new people and be around so many outstanding people. It's a gift for me to be there. So, and that was sort of shown to me probably about 3 or 4 weeks after the plane crash when I was speaking. The first place I spoke outside of Charlotte was a place called Oakboro Baptist Church. And after I got done speaking, I don't take money for speaking in churches. That's my gift to God, right? You're there for God. That's your hour to give. But if you've ever been to a Baptist church, the pastor's always like, grabs your hands and we're going to talk to everybody on the way out. So, okay, we're shaking everybody's hands. But somebody came up and said, you know, we want to give you a gift. And I said, I don't take gifts from churches. She goes, there's a picture of God's hands holding the plane up. And it's the original. She said, we want to give this to you. She said, I'm a regional executive for Bank of America. Please take this as a gift. And all of a sudden I started realizing that was her gift to me. I have to pay it forward. I have to give out instead of looking at inward. So that's the difference, where before it'd been about me, all about significance. I get something great, rah, rah. But now it's like, how can I give out to somebody something? Like today, I went to lunch. There was a little Hispanic gentleman who just came. I gave him a couple bucks. I was, you can see he's having a challenge. Mm. But I gave him a couple bucks. He just lighted up, said thank you, and gracias, and moved away. And I'm like, that's how I get my joy right now, is being able to do things like that for people.
Well, you know, one of the things I'm hearing in that too, Dave, and I want to just underscore it, for you, maybe I need to underscore it for you. Maybe I just need to underscore it for our magnificent men around the world. Sometimes the greatest gift you can give is your capacity to receive when somebody wants to give to you, whether it's God wanting to give you life, or whether it's a beautiful person from Bank of America who wants to give you a beautiful painting of the experience that you had. Sometimes the greatest gift we can give is our ability to receive. And I think oftentimes we forget that. And I love how contribution oriented you are. And at the same time, I'd like to just put that in as a reminder to everyone. Sometimes the contribution you make is opening the space for and allowing for someone else to give to you. So,
yeah. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. So speaking of giving, I wanted to let everyone know, if you are interested in finding out more about Dave and really connecting in with his radio show and his book and all of the things he's doing with Amazon Alexa, or maybe even booking him to speak, if you're somebody who is in the corporate environment or in an association or something, and you're looking for a phenomenally inspiring speaker who has a really powerful story and is going to make the hearts and minds of your audience open, what you want to do is you want to go to DaveSandersonSpeaks.com. So whenever you're listening to this, you can go to DaveSandersonSpeaks.com, and that's where you're going to find out all about what Dave's got going on in the moment and also about his book, Moments Matter. So Dave, I want to talk to you about that. I think I want to close with talking to you about your book. Can you share with our men on purpose around the world maybe three kernels of magic that you distilled that ended up in the Moments Matter book that were really important for you to make sure that you crystallized and put in that book so that they could inspire, motivate, or shift in some way the people who are receiving?
I appreciate that. So I think the number one thing I would probably say on that is when I realized the how moments in your life matter was one day I was actually speaking to my team, and this is in the book, speaking to my team, and we were trying to come up with a title. And I said, you know, what I realized through this whole experience is how all those moments in my life really mattered. And they said, well, what do you mean? I'm like, I said, I thought about this. I said, when I was 12 or 13 years old, I was a Boy Scout, and my father dropped me off in Delaware, Ohio. I was going for the Order of the Arrow Award. And back then, you dropped your son off, and basically you go out for like 2 days in the woods, and it's like survivor with a backpack, right? And one of the things I had to do during that adventure to get that award was I had to swim across the river with my backpack on. And I started telling my team, I said, you know what, maybe I did that when I was 12 or 13. So I had certainty when I had to jump in the water in the Hudson with my clothes on and everything that I was able to do it, because I'd already done it. It's just in a different place. Probably number one. Number two, I would say, this is something I think for a lot of people that really opened my eyes, but I think hopefully it's a lesson for everybody. We had two neighbors down the street, and they were elderly ladies, and they would always call our house when they needed something, right? And they're elderly ladies and they're neighbors. You're going to do whatever you can for your neighbors, right? So one day they called my wife. We can't get our TV on. So she calls me. I'm out here in my office. She calls me, can you go help them turn their TV on? All right. Walk down the street, click, get it on, right? And they came and said, will you stay for milk and cookies? And I said, well, of course. I always stay for milk and cookies, right? Who's not going to stay for milk and cookies for the two elderly ladies who could probably cook, right? So I'm sitting there while they're going to get their stuff right in the kitchen. So they had this coffee table, and they had these books on this coffee table. And I started looking at them, like, start flipping through them, like, whoa, these are concentration camps. Hmm. And I love World War II. So they came back out. I said, what are these? They both said, well, we were there. And they pulled their arms up and showed me their numbers. I said, whoa. I said, please let me record your story. I mean, they're 89 years old, right? They're going to die soon. No, we don't talk about it. So I tell people, I said, when you ever get around somebody who has like a history in their mind, record it, because you never have the chance to get it again. That's one of the big lessons. That's one of the reasons I wrote the book, to record this, not only for me, but for my grandkids and more importantly, my great-grandkids. And the third thing I say in the book, and it came to light during that day on the plane, is something that I learned and I knew, but I didn't really impart until that day, was those in the most uncertain times with the most certainty become a leader. And, you know, when all stuff's breaking loose, the person who gives that certainty, it could be the CEO of the company, but it also be that janitor at midnight, right? Somebody you don't even know who just instills certainty. And that's what I think I did that day and some other people did. And it came to play is like, whenever you want to be seen as a leader, step up and give certainty to people. And give that way, they'll look to you and you can give them direction. You know, so those are three nuggets that are in the book that I think that will really help me on a number of different levels, on not only give a certainty, but also around, you know, make sure you record history. And also make sure you remember all those moments in your life really do matter.
Yeah, beautiful. And what I'm hearing in that too is, you know, even in the most dire of circumstances, you were prepared. You were prepared to be present. You were prepared to take action. You were divinely positioned to become the Dave Sanderson that you are today. And so we want to remind all of you men on purpose out there, even if you're in a circumstance right now that seems dire, it is in fact preparing you to be the man you are becoming. And so thank you so much, Dave, for coming onto the show. It was such a pleasure. Let me remind everyone, you can find out more about Dave at davesandersonspeaks.com. Definitely, if you're somebody in a position to get Dave onto your stage, I would totally invite you to get going on that and book him to speak and share his message and his brilliance with your audience. I'm very grateful that you've been on the show today, Dave. Thank you so much for coming. And listeners, we love feedback. Please let us know what you thought of this show or send in questions and suggestions to listeners at menonpurposepodcast.com. We might even give you a shout out on the show. Thanks for tuning in. Keep your ears open. And remember, you are magnificent.
Thanks for tuning in, downloading, and listening. Be sure to review and rate Men on Purpose on iTunes and share with other men who can benefit from today's episode. Men on Purpose is the premier podcast series for informing, activating, and inspiring the leader who has made his money and knows that now is the time to make his mark. We welcome your feedback and guest suggestions and invite you to subscribe to our mailing list to be notified of each new episode at menonpurposepodcast.com.